Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast. My name's Taylor, and today I sit down with a runner whose first and only two marathon experiences have both been at the New York City Marathon. His first experience wasn't everything he hoped for. He felt a bit unprepared and ended up in a med tent a few times before finishing, but after that race, he knew he needed to go back and do it again a year later for redemption. We also talk about balancing a family and marathon training, falling in love with the process, and more. So without further ado, please welcome Sean. Sean, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Hope you're having a great weekend. I'm really excited to break down your first couple marathon experiences. Both of them have been the New York City Marathon, which I think is a hot way to start your marathon journey. But before we get there, I'm curious how you got involved in this world in the first place.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to chat. So thanks for finding time to chat. How I got into the running world. I grew up an athlete, athletic family. Both my parents were college athletes. My dad played basketball, my mom played volleyball, my brother played basketball, my sister played volleyball. So I just played sports growing up all the time, and running was sort of a necessary evil in the athletic world, and often a punishment on some occasions. But even when it wasn't, it was always running to keep sort of shape for whatever sport. You need to be able to breathe when you run. And so the early connection to running was not all that positive. I ran cross country in seventh grade, and it was a disaster. I was very slow and didn't like it, but my friends ran, so I stuck with it, and then didn't do any sort of formal running again other than like occasional runs again in an off season to stay in shape. But
sure.
Went to college, was a student manager for a basketball team, and then walked on my senior year. So fitness became really important in that year to be able to keep up. And then after college, running just became sort of like something I thought I should do once in a while. I lived in LA for a while, so I'd run on the beach and it was really pleasant. And then all of a sudden I was 29 and my best friend from college lives in New York City. And we had said we would do it by 30, the New York City Marathon. And we said we either do it or we're never going to do it. And suddenly running became really serious. It stopped being just a little exercise to get a sweat and became we need to actually have a plan for this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. A lot of people that I talk to that start in cross country kind of have that pipeline of like, doing it just because you have to in the beginning, and then it transitions into something else entirely. And I know running for basketball, I didn't play basketball in college, but I remember playing basketball in high school. It's completely different. So when did you feel like you kind of transitioned into like more of the distance sport, I guess?
Yeah, it's so different. It's so different. I try to go back and forth as an adult now, and like the soreness I feel based on what I do on a day is so strange.
But, right.
I think when I first left college, living in LA again, sort of, it was in Koreatown in Santa Monica, and like just running because I knew, oh, this is good for you. Like you're supposed to do fitness. So I'd go for runs, you know, 3 miles. That was pretty standard, something like that. The longest run, I think I would have been 25 or six. So a few years out of college again, we'd do those little runs, play basketball, work, you know, lift weights, whatever. And I came home from work one day, and I don't know if you're familiar with the name Jesse Itzler, but mm-hmm. he's all day running companies, found a lot of companies. And I had watched him do an overnight last person standing race. And like, I had watched that through work into the next day.
Right.
And so I came home and I said to my wife, I was like, I'm just not mentally tough right now. I need to do something that's going to make me mentally tough. Like I need to test my limits. It's been too long. I'm getting too comfortable. So I said, I'm running 10 miles, like on the spot. And she was like, what? And I decided I was just no real plan. I just said, I'm going to run. We live in the suburbs of our city. And I was like, I'm going to run to the center of our city. And that's my only guide. And so I just started. And I ended up running down like the side of a highway because I didn't maps. I just was like 10 miles that direction, go.
Yeah.
And it was awful. And I chafed. I had to take my shirt off. Like I had no plan at all. And my wife's like, there were people driving down the highway going, what is this kid doing? And I hit the 10 miles, but I didn't even like think of the term like out and back. So it was just, I went 10 in one direction, and then I had to call her and be like, please come pick me up. I'm hurting so bad. So that was the longest I'd ever run. And then again, didn't run long for really a couple more years after that when we signed up for the marathon. The big numbers are so incredibly intimidating when you're first starting out. Like the double digit, something about that I felt a block for a really long time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to that. It's just like we talk about the marathon distance is something that you have to, and even the half marathon distance, I won't even say the full thing. It's like it's something you have to kind of convince yourself you can do as you do it. When you're in the beginning, it's like, no, that can't do that. That's completely out of my like skill set, I guess you could say. But it is wild how you pick it up as you go, for sure.
It's crazy. Yeah, I would not have believed. Even on the first training run for New York, I was like, I don't know how this ends with 26 miles.
Right, right. So when you ran that 10 miler, did you have any sort of like base that you were working with, or it was really like, you know, 3 to 4 miles or something like that, and then you jumped to 10 from there?
Really just like the threes.
Yeah.
I would advise it. I definitely would advise it.
Sure.
It was the right combination of feeling lethargic about life and fitness and watching other people race is there's something, and I think Herm said it on your podcast. I was listening to it the other day. Seeing other people take it on flips a switch. And the particular race I was watching was absurd. I don't know if you ever watched those last people standing. They're nuts. You just run forever, it feels like. But
right.
The fact that I went to bed and woke up and he was still running his loop, and he had a videographer there, like documenting what was going on, and just the headspace that he was in, screaming, and just, I was like, I just got to go do it. So yeah, not the right way at all.
Sure. But it's cool. I mean, it just is a testament, I think, to, like you said, just having, you know, people out there that are proving that we can do hard things and thinking, you know, that maybe that could be me too. You see yourself in these people a little bit, which I think is pretty cool. But yeah, 10 miles from 3 miles is a little wild. So how did you kind of transition from there? You said you took some time off and then got back into it later.
Yeah, it was like this weird one-off for really that year. And then it really was, it feels like that time was a blur because that's around COVID time and like just the world that feels so long ago than it really wasn't. But I was, again, I was talking to my best friend, and my best friend from Duke, we ran together at Duke one time. He's my best friend to this day. He was just in town. His name's Michael. And we ran at Duke together one time, just again, like a stay in shape run.
Yeah.
And we did like 2 miles and we were cooked. And so I don't know what about our friendship. Just, it was like, we're going to do this together. And so we both signed up lottery, both didn't get it. So this was 20, because the first one was, this past one was 23. So I guess it was the 22 New York City Marathon was the first one. And so we didn't get lottery. We were like, we're doing charity, because if we don't do it, we're not going to do it. We signed up, and that's when I really, so that was probably 2 years, maybe a year or two after that 10 mile run. So in the in-between, it was like play pickup basketball, go for my little 3 milers, not run a lot. And then, yeah, we picked it back up when we signed up.
Got back to it. What made you guys choose the New York City Marathon? Was it just you were at a pivotal point in your life, you wanted to, you know, go for it? Or what was the choice?
Yeah, I didn't know a lot about the New York City Marathon other than it was a big deal. And he lives in New York City. And so he'd been around it and seen it and had coworkers run it. And he talked about how electric it was and the environment and the energy. And in my mind, I'm not like a great zero, as evidenced by the 0 to 10 mile run.
Yeah.
Not great at the building blocks. I'm really good like about getting excited for the full thing. So I was like, well, if I'm going to do one and I'm only going to do this once, I want to do the coolest one.
Sure. Yeah.
I want to like the best experience. And so we, and him living there, just like the logistics, race weekend logistics are nuts and it can be expensive. Like if your hotels, so he was there so I could stay with him, have a center, kind of have a home base. And so, yeah, that's how I ended up with New York.
Yeah, that is helpful to have some, like you said, a home base, because it is like the logistics of the whole thing is crazy. I think the world majors do pretty good about like transportation and organizing everything and make sure everybody gets where they need to be. But all the stuff you have to take care of yourself
yeah.
on top of running a marathon can get a little crazy for sure.
Absolutely.
So then from there, I mean, had your friend ran a marathon before, or this was also his first marathon?
His first, I think he did a half in the training build up, but yeah, his first, and he ended up getting hurt in training. So didn't run in 22, and became a part of the 23 storyline later, but.
Gotcha.
So it ended up being a solo endeavor, which made it even kind of less exciting because I was visiting with him, but then he wasn't running and
doing it. Yeah.
We kind of got deflated, but yeah, he was riding a city bike and a kid ran out from their parent and he like cranked and it was wet.
Oh, no.
And he slid out and he hurt his hamstring and his leg. So he had to call it.
Awful. How far into training were you guys at that point?
Gosh, we were pretty past halfway. Pretty good. So it was disappointing. Like he had started to build a real base and it was in sight. So it was a bummer.
That's really awful. It reminds me of all the people during COVID that trained for their full marathons and got, you know, like their races canceled and everything. It's such a bummer to go through all that training and then have it just kind of come to a halt. But we know he ran the 2023 one, so we'll get there.
Yes.
But for you, for your journey to your first marathon, like, were you following any sort of training plan to like build up mileage on the weekends, or what did that look like?
I was a disaster. I didn't sign up for a coach. I didn't sign up for a plan the first time around. I like Googled some things, kind of like, I was like, I think I'm supposed to get a couple short ones and then a longer one. And I'll just make my longer one a little bit longer every weekend. Like there was no block. There wasn't an official start. It was just like, all right, I'm in through charity, start running.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, don't do that. Like, do a plan. I didn't get a coach. I still haven't done the coach. That's probably the next step in the journey and the evolution. But I tried to Google and add like a couple miles each Saturday. Saturday morning was when I'd do the long run. I'd get up super early and go. And even just like how I approached those, I felt great when I'd get done. And I would try to do like 5 mile blocks. So I'd like run 5 miles, stop at a gas station, water, hydrate, next 5 miles, water, hydrate. So even in the build up to the 20, like that's not really how the runs go. Like sure. I would take long breaks and I know some of it's about being on your feet and getting used to being on your feet, but in hindsight, it was no plan is not a good plan.
Yeah.
And that impacted me during the race. It ends up coming up about 16 miles in.
Sure. And was 20 miles the longest run that you did as you were building up mileage?
Longest one. I was so afraid of it.
Sure.
I was so afraid of that run. And because at first it was like, you should do two 20s. And then I was like, if I get one done, it'll be a miracle. Like,
yeah.
And so I did. And it was hard, and I remember very specifically that morning because it was drizzling, which actually felt really nice, and it was cool, but that also was nothing like what the race conditions ended up being in that year. I think it was the hottest New York one on record at that point. I walked into New York just woefully unprepared for the mileage, for the experience, for the transportation. Like, I was watching videos of people running the marathon. I was like, I got to learn the terrain and know what it feels. But I didn't pay attention to like how the ferries work.
Mm.
And so if you were someone on the ferry in 2022, you already know it was a mess.
Yeah.
I poor planning in the first go.
Sure. Which I think a lot of people are going to relate to, even New York Marathon aside, like just not having a ton of information for your first one and a lot of trial and error, I would say, for sure.
Absolutely.
But I'm curious, just before we get to race day, like it had to be, like you said, pretty disheartening, I guess, your friend getting injured and kind of dropping out of the whole thing and you having to continue training. So like mentally, did that take a hit on you? Were you thinking maybe I will drop out this year too and do it next year? Like what did that look like?
Selfish sadness versus sort of sadness for him. So I was, you know, marathon runner folks, I think, especially the first one, become very self-involved. Like, I'm very willing to call that out about myself. We become obsessed. We buy all the shoes, the gels. Like, if you really get into the whole thing. And so I was selfishly upset because I thought it would impact me. But I was also sad for him because I didn't have plans to do it a second time. Originally, like, the plan was to go do this one time.
Sure.
And then maybe try to go cheer for him. He had rolled it forward the next year. So I was sad that we were going to lose that shared experience, which eventually ended up being like a real connector for us as adult friends, like in this new phase of life. So I was bummed, but there was a happy ending.
Yeah, kept pushing through. And having to do all those runs solo, were you a headphone runner then from there? Or like what goes on during a run when you're running solo, I guess?
Yeah, we got a couple runs in together because he'd come into town a good amount and mm-hmm. we would still headphone. I'm not a good not headphone runner. I hate to hear myself suffer.
I'm the same way.
And so I can't hear my like the heavy breath. So I'm noise cancellation. Like I'm constantly being told by Apple my music's too loud, which I need to fix. So the psychology of even just the like, even if we're in different places, like the text, like, did you get your run in today? All of a sudden it's like, who do I text? Like, who's my little, that's where like run groups and stuff like that are so encouraging. And it became a solo endeavor.
Yeah. Yeah. The run groups are a little intimidating in the beginning too, because you're just like, you don't know if you're good enough to run with them and you don't know if they're going to be 10 times faster than you and leave you in the dust. So yeah, it can be a little intimidating for sure. But got through training solo. So let's jump to race day. What was you said the logistics kind of leading up to the thing were a little tricky. Yeah. So what did that look like?
Oh my gosh. So I stayed with my friend and then I got a hotel the night before just to like try to get good sleep and, you know, lay everything out. And I did all those things. I felt like, you know, so smart. I walked to Target. I bought a thing of bagels. Had all my salt. I had salt pills. Someone had suggested salt pills, which in hindsight, I wouldn't have done because I don't think they dissolve super fast. Now I like actual pour-in mixes, but get up. I'm naively like, I'm going to walk down to the ferry. So I walk down. My buddy bikes down to send me off. And the ferry station is packed. Like, we were supposed to pre-sign up for ferry. I had my time. I thought, I'm just going to walk in with my time, get on my ferry. It's all good. It was like human push. Jeez. Like, it was borderline like dangerous. And I don't fault anyone other than just like everyone being excited. And it's volunteers trying to manage it and no one's listening to them. And there are people who are already late for their, you know, wave. And so there's panic involved too. And so I ended up eventually getting on a ferry, like pushing on. And then they were so packed and I didn't think about this. I didn't have a seat. And so I was standing and I was going away from Manhattan. I was enjoying this. I was like, this is beautiful. I'm glad to get this moment. But I was on my feet all morning.
Jeez, yeah.
And had been on my feet too much the day before doing kind of like touristy things. That was another lesson learned. Like, it's fun to be in New York, but you really got to get off your feet. So I was on my feet for the whole ferry. And then when the ferry lands, they charter bus you from there to the start. Well, there was no organization there. That whole wave just was then pushing on the buses with more pressure because they're feeling like, and people are cutting and there's no line and people are yelling.
Of course, yeah.
And people were like, yelling like, you're crushing them. Like, it was that kind of like people were getting. So that was another like hour on feet waiting to get on one of those buses. So I ended up getting to the starting village, like, I think not even an hour before my wave. And I think that's not typical. That was not my experience the second time through. So I think the being on my feet was really stressful. And I think I'm not a huge like be in large crowd person.
Yeah.
My wife makes fun of me. Like, I get a little edgy if people are like all over me. And it was that straight for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
So I just was, I went in, I think a little like this.
Yeah. I mean, being anxious like that, and I'm the same way. I don't love big crowds either. I wouldn't love being pushed around before a race at all. And like going into that with that kind of energy could not have been like a great headspace. So what were you thinking like at the start line or in the village? Like what was going through your head?
Well, like there's that energy. Then there's the nervous energy for the race.
Right.
And then like, of course, doubt creeps in. You're like, what am I doing? How am I getting to the other side of this? Like, and I didn't have a plan. I'd read, don't start too fast because you'll, and of course I didn't listen to that. so I just was anxious. I didn't know like where to go. It's crowded. You want to go to the bathroom. There's a long line for all the porta potties. Luckily I came prepared, like little race day tip for the big races. I assume this is true everywhere. They're out of toilet paper like an hour into the village being open. So I had, someone had told me to bring like wet wipes. I was literally like handing them out to people. So I brought a box.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to get rid of them, people. Like, but just anxious. I'm embarrassed to say, like, hardly stretched, which I didn't really do anyway.
Yeah.
Like, part of that whole no plan thing was just kind of like, oh, quad, calf, go. And so I, like, was so anxious, and it was all happening. It felt like it was happening really fast. And next thing I know, they're herding us on to the bridge, and you're in your weight. It just, the headspace was not great. There was excitement and anticipation, but I was definitely a little bit like, this all just was a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot to take in for sure. So you got to the start line, and what time of day was this? Cause you said that it was starting, or this was the hottest or one of the hottest New York City marathons. So yeah. What time of day were you starting?
I was a late ways because I'm slow. They do it by time, and you just guesstimate your pace. And so I sort of like guessed what mine was, and, it ended up, I think I had like an 11 o'clock start or something like that, which in my, again, like amateur mind, I was like, well, that's going to get me in so late. It's going to be so hard for me to get back and shower and like meet up with everybody to go out and like have fun. I was so tired. That should not have even been a consideration for me, but yeah, that's, it was late and it was hot. And I like had read bring a jacket that you dump, all this stuff. I had bought the throwaway clothes, or the donation clothes. I was probably sweating all morning and not even really thinking or hydrating appropriately to be prepared for that. Like in hindsight, the hydration plan, I drank the night before and did all the right things there, but I just think I lost a lot more in that morning before I was ever even running.
Sure. And yeah, and like you said, you just time on your feet too. You were already kind of like taking a step back before you got to even start the marathon. So were you taking any sort of like pack with you? Did you have water that you were bringing, or you were going to rely on the aid stations? What did fuel look like?
I don't even think I had a water bottle. I think I did aid stations the whole way. I had a belt, and I had a bag of salt pills. I had stuffed in a couple of the like pre-packed wet wipes because I'd heard all these horror stories of like people having emergencies. I bought petroleum packs or like the petroleum jelly packs, individual ones. So I had pre-put everything everywhere, but like put a bunch in there. And at the time I've switched away from these, but I was running with energy gum. I don't even remember the brand, so I'm not trying to avoid shouting them out, but yeah. I got them at like Whole Foods and they were like energy chew gummies, and I had done those during training and they sat with my stomach, so I brought those up. I think that was it, and then just did aid stations. But even aid stations, like I didn't stop at all of them, like despite it being crazy hot, and I'm a sweater, like just so much naivety going in into it.
Yeah, looking back on the whole thing, you're like, gosh, like what was I thinking? I was the same way. I'm like, well, what was I doing? But you know, you just don't know what you don't know. So it's good that you had even some fuel, because I've talked to some people talking about their first marathon experience where they were like, yeah, I chugged a water before and then that was it. You know, I hope for the best. So at least you had something going into it. That's good.
A little bit. I relied heavily on the course. People hand out so much at that race, and in some like dark low moments, like all of a sudden there'd be a kid with a Mott's gummy pack. And like, I distinctively remember that Mott's gummy pack and the goodness I felt after I ate it. Like within the context of the larger race, I have a very hyper specific moment where I was like, those things, I might've quit.
Yeah.
And that got me over a hump. And bananas and stuff like that. If there weren't people giving out fuel, I would have been severely underfueled.
Sure. That's cool though, that you could feel it, that you were like, oh, okay, that helped. That I feel that for sure.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right. Well, let's break down the miles. I'm curious, like, I feel like we could probably break it into a couple different chunks, but I'll let you decide where you want to break it up. But what was the first, I guess, like 10 to 13 miles like for you?
first 10 were great. My sister-in-law's family lives in Brooklyn. I've been getting texts. I had my phone in my hand, not so much for content, but something had gotten wrong. Like, my headphones weren't working because Bluetooth was a mess. Like, Garmin wasn't working. Everything is so congested. But I had my phone, and I was getting texts of where to look for them. And so I cruised through Brooklyn. They were right near Barclays, feeling good. Energy's great. I did have to pop off and use the bathroom one time, like behind a bridge, because it was in like a bad spot. Other than that, like, all was smooth. Got to them. I have the pictures they took with me and them. They text the family. He's looking great. I'm looking at my times. Like, I am crushing, feeling like so good. And then it gets a little harder. I'm trying to think of where Bay Ridge was and all that, but I remember running through Bay Ridge. That was before Barclays. Get up to Barclays, see them. I'm like juiced to have seen them. Then I kind of start to hit the pain cave, but I'm like, I'm good. Definitely start to get tired. Where the race really splits up is 16. 16 is the Queensboro Bridge. So I start running up that. And I'm like, goodness gracious, this is steep. This is a big bridge. And I'm going up it. Like, in hindsight, I should have walked. I don't know if it was a pride thing or just like, I didn't walk in training and I don't want to switch up now. Like, I don't know what it was, but I didn't walk. So I was doing like a trot. And I probably doing that trot was putting way too much on my quads. Like, you should be really running from your butt, I think, when you're going up hills, or like generating a lot of force from the backside of your legs. And I was not. And I was doing this little trot and one started to feel crampy. And my whole training, I cramped one time, a little half cramp. It was my calf after I ran a mile uphill. So I was like, cramps weren't even in my athletic career. I never cramped up. So I had no idea what to do. And one started to go and it started to get pretty bad. And then the other started to go. So I eventually it turned into a walk towards the top. So I get to the top and I'm like, all right, you're at the top. You're going downhill, so you'll be fine. Wasn't fine. They start getting worse. So I call Mel. And I'm like, and she played college tennis. She was super, like, she played all the time out in the sun. So she was used to it. So I'm like, what do I do? And she's like, get to an aid station, I guess. I don't know what to tell you. You're there. Like, don't quit.
Yeah.
So I get to the aid station at the bottom of the hill. And you know, your whole family is tracking you, like all your friends, your coworkers. So you're like, oh, they're seeing me stop. Like, they're. Yeah. So I get to this aid station at the bottom and I get in there and I don't even know like how to enter an aid station. Like, I'm like, this isn't a medical emergency. I'm just cramping.
Yeah.
So they're like, sit down. And there's people in there, again, so hot for this marathon. There's people in there. There was one dude laid out that wasn't talking. Like, there are real health risks too at these things. So he was okay. But, they're like, we can give you a Gatorade and put salt in it. And I'm like, great. She's like, I can give you a little trigger massage and then you got to go. So I'm like, great. Just does that. Get running again. So I run maybe 15 to 16 is Queensboro, and then I run 16 to 17. And I'm back at like a good pace. I call my buddy that's like been tracking me. And I'm like, I'm back. Like, I'm so hyped, like feeling like safe. And then the next mile, it all starts over again and all starts re-cramping. And so I go to the next med tent. And I'm like, can y'all loosen up? I'm outside. First, I'm outside and I'm trying to stretch my quads. And when I try to stretch my quads, my hamstrings cramp. So now like the whole leg is starting to go. So I go in there and she's like, I'll give you a little more trigger point, another Gatorade. And she's like, you say you're going to go for it. Just go. Like, there's nothing else. And she's like, just so you know, it's totally locked up. So you're probably going to bruise. Wow. And I, sure enough, like both my quads the next day were bruised up. And whoever that, I think it was a volunteer like PA. I talked about that story on TikTok like the next day or 2 days later, and she commented, like, somehow the algorithm like, got to her reach. And she was like, I was that person. I'm so glad like you're okay. And like, I'm sorry it bruised. And so literally from that point on, the last 10 miles was a walk, occasional like waddle, And then when I got into Central Park, I got a mile in, kind of walk jogging, where I found like an angle that didn't activate my quads, but like probably to do more than a mile would not be good for the other parts of the body, like terrible form, but, and got through the finish. So gosh, I think it took me 6 hours. It was so like, I have no aspirations to be fast. It was definitely a completion thing for me, but
yeah.
Those last 10 were just, cause it's like anger, sadness. You feel like you have a lot more in the tank. Like my body's betraying me. Like I could be doing a lot more. And so I left just feeling like super unsatisfied. Did recovery that night, went home the next day. Family had a party for my return. Like friends, family, huge, like pizza party, cake, like you did That's it. And cool. I was like, yeah. I don't feel like I deserve this at all.
Sure.
So it was, I left disappointed and like somewhere in my head, I was like, oh,
yeah. Yeah.
It just happened a lot sooner than I thought it would.
Sure. So you were thinking redemption time. We got to go run this thing back and see if we can do it right the second time around. Yeah. But I could see where that would be frustrating. Cause it's like, it sounds like mentally you were there. Like you were ready to do it. You were, you know, feeling like you did what you could to get there. And then your body or your quads were what were holding you back. I think that's why cramps are the most frustrating, is because it's like one specific area of your body and everything else could be feeling completely fine.
Yeah.
Super frustrating.
I felt like I was in a good spot and just never having dealt with it in the training. Like even that, I was almost like afraid of the unknown. Cause I remember saying to Mel on the phone, I was like, can it get worse if I keep running on it? Like, I think I can probably figure out a way to tolerate, but
yeah,
I don't want to like, I do have a family. Like I want to be able to not be like severely injured. She was like, I think you'll be fine.
Did that last med, like what the lady said to you at the last med tent, where she was just like, you got to push through, you're going to bruise. But like, did that give you some mental peace in that way to be like, okay, I'm not going to seriously hurt myself because this person's sending me on my way?
It psyched me up. And then the other thing, I forgot about this actually. The other thing that happened was they gave me ibuprofen or Tylenol or something like that, but they mark your bib when you do med tents.
Mm.
And no one said anything. Like this wasn't based in any logic. This was just based in tired runner thought. But I was like, if I go in a third time, they're going to pull me.
Mm.
Like, I don't know
like
why.
Like you were
I had
getting strikes
fear.
on your
yeah,
vest.
And I was afraid. I was so, yeah. So the last, I was like, this has to be the last one after they marked it. And again, I don't know if it was, I felt like three strikes and you're out. I don't know. There was no reason to think that, but I was like, I just can't stop at another one, no matter how bad it gets. I just have to walk and power walk and just figure out a way.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was not a fun experience.
Yeah, it sounds like quite the experience, and the heat doesn't help. That probably just added a whole other layer to the whole thing. So when you crossed the finish line, like, did you get to? I've ran it myself, but I've heard the New York City finish line is just unreal. Like, did you get to feel the energy at all, or were you so just like disappointed in the experience that you couldn't really be present in it?
It was a little bit of both. It was a little bit of both. There was pride in finishing and not quitting at 17. But there was also immediate, like, there's more.
Yeah.
There's more here. I think the run walk strategy is great. Nothing against it, but I knew I personally would feel more fulfilled, even if it's slow, if I ran from the beginning to the end. There was something in my head, like, I didn't have to hit under, there was no number, like,
yeah.
It just had to be stay in motion at a jog for 26.2. And so, yeah, it was a blend. And it was also a long walk. I don't know if anyone's talked about that here before.
Yeah.
You like, it's not easy to get out of Central Park. So you're like, ow, now I need to walk out of here.
Yeah. No, people always are like, oh yeah, but you know, they talk down on walk jog or whatever, but it's longer on your feet. And like it's a long time to be out in the elements, out in the sun, out, you know, doing anything. Walking, it's just going to elongate your experience. So where it is maybe quote unquote easier to walk, it's taking up more time. So it ends up kind of, you know, ending up in the same spot.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Okay, cool. So that was the first race experience. And I know you had your party and everything from there. Did you, how much time did you take off after your first marathon before you started thinking, all right, let's get back into running?
So I signed up for a half a month later with a friend, in part because I was like, I already have mileage base. And also because it didn't break me down like a marathon would, because I didn't run the last 10. So they were like, I was sore. My hips were sore. I, you know, was a little like chafed up and all that, but it wasn't, it didn't feel like I beat myself up.
Mm.
So I did a half that, December. Yeah. And then I'm trying to remember, then I took time off after that. Kind of like, you know, fell out of it for a little while.
Sure.
It's a lot of running. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of strain on a partner. It's especially as you get like the mileage really, really big. The lottery reopened and it was like, pulled me back in. And I thought, well, and my wife and I was great through it all, but she was not like super thrilled about the idea of signing up for another one of these just right away. I was like, well, I'll enter the lottery. It's so one in a million. Like if I don't get it, if I get it, I have to go. Like that's destiny. And if I don't, whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't get it. And then I'm like, but it's only going to get harder. I'm only getting older. I already have a decent base. Like I've taken some time off, but I'm like decently fit. I should just go back. So I signed up to fundraise again. Like eventually she came around. We said, the agreement was she got to pick the charity that we did the fundraising for.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Which I felt was great. And so convinced her to sign back up, and my buddy was in it because he had pushed his to the next year. So then we jumped right back into running and ran a half that spring. I should say this, I meant to run a half before the first marathon. This was another like beginner, just not thinking. My father-in-law is a runner. He said, sign up for a race locally so that you've put on a bib, you've gone to the start, you felt the jitters, like you want to feel that. Well, I signed up for one and it got stormed out.
Oh
no. And so the New York City Marathon was the first time I ever put on a bib.
That's wild.
So it was like not well planned. So the second time around, I was like, I need to get like a tune up half marathon.
Yeah.
And so I did that in the spring and broke two, which I was like,
oh, that's great.
For me, that's so fast.
Yeah.
I used that time to convince New York City to give me an earlier slot.
Okay.
I was like,
nice.
I was like, because they use your best run in their system, and my best run was a walk. So I was like, guys, I'm not fast, but I'm also not walking this year.
Yeah.
And so they let me submit that as an official, like, I got to move up a little bit.
So you could start a little earlier, hopefully not hit the heat in the middle of the day.
Exactly.
Well, cool. So what were you thinking this time around? So you signed up, or you signed up for your charity, you know you're going to run this thing. Like, what were you thinking you were going to do different the second time around from the first time around?
A plan.
That helps.
A plan. I signed up for a Hal Higdon.
Oh, cool.
Which I just heard someone say, I have an allegiance to them. I just heard that was a really good beginner plan. So
yeah.
I had, like, intermediate one. You know, they show you what you're committing to. Like, I just knew track days were going to be really hard for me to do. So I picked one that didn't have track days. I knew like multiple 20 milers would be really hard with the family and stuff. So I picked, I think, intermediate one, Hal Higdon plan. And this is maybe good advice for anyone that has a partner or is, you know, like it's costing not just your time, but someone else's time. I was rigidly flexible with the Hal Higdon plan.
Yeah.
So it was on the fridge. And cross off as I go, but like if the 3 mile day and the 5 mile day had to flip flop because something came up, some work, whatever it was, I just did. I think it's very easy to be selfish when we fall into these training modes and be like, this is the plan today. I told you I need this 10 miles. And it's like, yeah, but stuff's hitting the fan at work and we were supposed to go to this dinner with my family. Like, and to be able to be like, you know what, you're right, I can flip. This can be the rest day. So a plan, but with some flexibility was thought number one. And then really just like constant thinking about that bridge.
Yeah.
Like it, I posted a video after that night, and I was literally crying. So I was like just overwhelmed with the sort of like proudness of it. But I spent a year thinking about that bridge and being like, I'm going to feel so good when I run over that bridge and I can keep running. And so those are like the two driving thoughts.
Yeah. Keep you going through the whole thing. And how many days a week? I know you were being pretty flexible with like when you were running the runs, but how many days a week were you running like your short runs and then your long run?
Yeah, I was, gosh, it was either 4 or 5 most weeks.
Okay.
And it's funny, I was actually just going through some storage in the garage and I found the sheet that was on the fridge.
Oh, cool.
I should have pulled it out for this, but there was one rest day and then one like cross train day. And then the rest were run. So it was like shorter stuff, but by the end, like the midweek run's still like an 8 miler.
Yeah. By the end, your long runs are were your short runs and everything starts to blend together for sure. And how long was this training plan? I know the Hal Higdon ones are typically what, 16 to 20
ish? I think it was 18. I had an 18-week plan. So it felt like, okay, I know I'm in, but I don't need to start just like aimlessly running. Like we're going to do a build and there's going to be some thought to it. I found that incredibly helpful and helped keep me accountable. So it wasn't just like, oh, I'm just going to go run 3 miles tonight. I'm just going to go run 4. I'm going to see how I feel when I get out there. It was more like, nope, 5's the number today. You're running 5.
Yep.
My mind, I like being told like, which I learned during this process. I don't think that I necessarily knew that. I was like, no, I like, which is why I think the next step is, I think the next thing is that someone be like, nope, this is the plan.
Yeah. Yeah. It just takes a little bit of the thought out of it, I think. Just it allows you to go out and execute, especially, I know you have a family, you have a wife and everything. So like anything that I'm sure you can take off the mental load is going to be helpful for the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, cool. And then when did you feel like, since your both training experiences were so different, like when did you feel like your body was feeling better? So like recovery was getting a little bit easier and you weren't, you know, feeling as sore afterwards, like things like that.
It's interesting. One, and this is still like a thing I'm working on. I don't stretch. Like that's still a big problem. So that impacts certainly how good you feel. I didn't even mention this part of it. The first time I was training the marathon, I was doing full-time grad school and working full-time.
Oh, wow.
On top of being new parents. So there was a lot that went into that not being great training. So getting a little bit more sleep definitely helped. I think the other thing was like, I don't know if other people would feel this. I built confidence through the first training cycle, then got away from it for a while. And when I started the second time again, I had to like reteach myself that I was a runner. Like 10 felt scary again. Mm. 20 felt scary again. Like all those numbers where I was like, you build that confidence up. So when it comes to race day, you're like, I did 20 a couple weeks ago. I'm going to be just fine. I've done this. And the last 6 are just going to be cake because I've just the adrenaline. And then when you start over, especially if you take time off in between, like, for me, it felt like I was really starting at square one, especially because I didn't succeed in my mind. So it was kind of like back to the drawing board. But when I started seeing those big numbers again, I was like, I felt that same pit in my stomach. Like, oh gosh, that's a lot. But I did know at least that if you just do it, eventually you get to that number and it's accomplished. You know, you can accomplish it.
Yeah. And was it pretty similar? Like same 20 miles was your longest run for the second time around. It was pretty similar.
Yeah,
in that
I kept
sense.
20 is the longest. I picked one that was the longest. I think I was supposed to run 2 20s and ended up only doing 1. I don't remember if I got sick or what happened. So I think I only ran 1 20. And I think in hindsight, I think I started a week early, like for me and my body. I think I started when they said felt like my taper was a little too long.
Mm-hmm.
I started to get restless.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'd say I felt like a beginner all over again in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially taking some time off too. That always makes you feel like you don't really lose your base, I think, when you've already built up a pretty solid one, but you do feel like that mentally when you're coming back into it for sure. Well, cool. Well, I'm curious now, how were you feeling? Like, I know taper period sounds like it was a little anxious, maybe a little long, but like leading up to it the second time around, how were you feeling about the race?
I felt good. I felt excited. I had my friend running with me.
Yeah, that helps.
So we were on different buses, but we were definitely felt like I had a buddy. I switched to buses. I didn't do the ferry again. So I switched to buses. I got in line for the bus behind a classmate from high school.
Wow.
Had no idea they were there. Had no big New York City. Someone I knew from my high school was there. And so we got to talking. I sat. She was running it for the second year in a row. She was running it with her friend's dad, who was running his first. So him and I sat on the bus ride together and like talked through it, and you know, the pre-race anxiety. We were just chit-chatting away and got to the village because I had my friend who lived in New York. He knew people in New York who were running. So like we found a pod of people to hang out with. We got there much earlier so we could stretch and fuel and bathroom. So it was way more laid back. I'll tell on myself. I hope I don't get in trouble for this. This is bad. I wouldn't tell people to do this, but my friend was in an earlier wave because he lives in New York and had done enough of their local races that like he's a little bit faster than me, but he also had faster times on record.
Mm.
And so we're sitting there and I was going to see him off and I was going to be like 50 minutes later. And I was like, but I want to run with you, buddy. Like, I don't want to do this alone again.
Yeah.
And so I was a little sneaky and my sweatshirt stayed on until I got into the corral. And so I hid the color of my sweatshirt and stuck by with him. And I was like, I might get disqualified. Like, you don't know. I'm like, are the chips not going to be activated? Am I not going to get a real time or whatever? And in my mind, I was like, well, I'm not stealing a bib. So I feel like less bad. And then I ran with him. And so that was both got done earlier, but also having that. But that we ran the first 10 together before we kind of peeled off because I made a bathroom stop. And I was like, just go. But like the bond first 10 miles and just us both being like, don't go too fast. Like, keep it easy. We're just having someone to be like, don't get caught up in it. Each time we started to get a little too amped up, we're like, slow down. That was really great. And then I found a TikTok friend.
Oh, cool.
Like just out there on the course.
Yeah. So you were seeing people left and right this whole time.
Yeah. And we clipped maybe a mile or two together and he's a New York fireman. And so like everyone was going nuts when he ran by because they love their local heroes. And so like, at one time I was like, man, I'm getting a lot of love. And then I was like, oh, they're all clapping for the fireman, not me.
We can pretend.
Yeah. I was like, I use that as energy. I'll take it.
For sure. Cool. So you were meeting people left and right. I'm sure that helped change a lot of the experience too, was just having people. You went from almost doing it completely alone to doing it with like four or five different people. So that's very cool. The second time was shaken out like that. So it sounds like the first 10 went pretty good. What about the bridge? What happened when we hit the bridge around?
I was scared, like truly still scared.
Yeah.
Going up it. And, but my legs felt better. It was cooler. I had a much better hydration plan. Had switched to like more like element type drinks rather than pills. And so got up it. Still like very scared because I was like, I could take me out at any second. Like I truly felt like I was like trying to dodge landmines running up that bridge. Got to the top, started running down. I filmed just like a little selfie clip, started tearing up. I had my sunglasses on, so I'm like hiding behind my sunglasses. But like the overwhelming feeling of one was like, I knew I could. So it was like very redemptive. And the other thing, other than being proud, was like an excitement because I didn't get to run. That's supposed to be like the best stretch when you turn off the Queensborough. You hear people as you're coming down the Queensborough Bridge. I don't know what avenue that is, but it's packed. And it was like, well, I peeled off Med Tent and then like was kind of in my head.
Yeah.
This time I got to turn that corner, run that crowd, experience the city in all these ways. Where like, even though I went through the spaces the year before, I was so like down on myself and negative So year two, I was much more like, I'm going to smile. I'm going to woo. Like, I'm really going to be like appreciating the crowd and not being worried about it being a race, but just like trying to take in each spot. So it was, I was super proud going over the bridge and just like reflecting on the whole year of training. And then also very excited because like, all right, now I get to do this. Like this was, I didn't get to do this and now I get to. So yeah, it was excitement and a lot of pride. Like I'm very happy and okay to say I was super proud. So.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's something that you said you were thinking about for basically a full year since the last time. And so like to have all that come to fruition had to be such a cool feeling.
Yeah, it was like athletic wise, I think making the Duke basketball team was like a cool whole side quest, but that was probably 1A running. Like it was very emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. And then how did you like, because that's mile 16, you said, right? Is when you hit that bridge. So then you kind of have to collect yourself a little bit, right? And go, okay, 10 more miles to go. Here we go.
That's exactly. I had to have that. I'm like, I can't be crying. I still, and there's so much unknown because even I've run the 20 in training. So I have confidence in that 16 to 20 range, but I don't know what's going to happen 20 to 26. That was the real pain cave where I was like, oh, I'll just float because I'll be so excited. I was hurting. And New York City is not flat. It is not flat. There's a lot of hills running alongside Central Park. So there were some moments where I was like, I'm hurting.
Yeah.
But not in the way where I didn't think it would be done. It just was like, oh, this is miserable.
Sure. So it wasn't like cramping or anything or like actual pain or anything like that. It was just, man, I'm tired. I got to get through this thing.
Exactly. I was like, ooh, hips are sore, like ankle, sure. You know, you start to feel those feet.
Sure. But were you still like at that point, because your goal the second time around was to be running the whole time or the majority of the time. Were you still like on pace for that once you got past the 6 mile mark for the most part?
Yep. I kept it moving. I actually, it's crazy. It's another thing I should have pulled up before. My run chart, like the people that were following me were like, well, you were consistent. I think we said like start slow and we thought we'd speed up. I started slow-ish and just, I think I like stayed at 11:10-ish. There were no big upswings and there were no big downs. It was just I found my trot and just stuck with it.
Kept it.
And by the end, when I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to speed up, I was like, nope, nothing left in the tank.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's good to be consistent. Then you know that you did whatever you did in training paid off, you know, that you're able to make it through with a consistent pace. And then the second time around, you hopefully got to feel the finish line a little bit more because you had accomplished your goal. So what was that like?
I was ready to cry again. I think I kind of held it together, but the pride, the feel like of all of the running, like what I wish I could share with people with running that I think people talk about it, maybe not as much. Like you hear people talk about the runner's high or like any, you know, I love that running's being more accessible and like we're seeing more like people doing it that aren't, you know, looking like pro runners. The goodness that you feel when you do something you thought you couldn't do, running or otherwise, but running's a great place to find this feeling, is such a good feeling. To legitimately feel, I think especially as adults, like I'm 30 now, so maybe it's a little bit of perspective on life, to do something where you legitimately felt like you couldn't do it and to overcome it and go back and get it done, like that's a really good feeling and builds a lot of self-confidence. And I would love for more people to feel that feeling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm also come from a team sport background. And I think that's something we got a little taste of when we were in team sports, when we were a little younger. And then you kind of lose that as an adult. There's nothing that really like scratches that itch for you. And then you find something like running where you can accomplish things and you can work over these like mental barriers that you used to be able to work through sports. And it's just, you're like, finally, I'm like back to this feeling.
I totally agree. I think, giving myself a goal again athletically was huge because I just was kind of floating, you know, like through 20s, doing stuff, being sort of active, not caring that much about health and wellness. And then like running, so the mental sort of finding goals and challenges. And then also just like, I don't mean to minimize, and I say this very carefully, like it's not in replacement of like good doctor care for mental health.
running is not a solution for all things, but right.
It was a huge boon for my own mental health,
which I don't mean to say that like I'm very fortunate to not have had any major struggles, but like
just to be able to put in headphones and go, and whatever the worry of the day was or whatever the anxiety of the day was, 8 miles later, you're like, I feel great.
Yeah.
And to feel it like wash off as you go, was something I didn't know to expect when I started the running journey, like more seriously. But now it's like one of the things I cherish most. I'm like, oh, I gotta go for a run. Like I gotta, yeah. Sometimes it's the think place. Sometimes it's the like turn the brain off and nothing place. Sometimes it's the podcast place. But I did not expect that part of it. And that was probably the most impactful, over the whole thing.
Totally. Yeah. It's like taking the, whatever you're dealing with and giving it somewhere to go. Like it's a lot going on and you can put it towards something, other than just like sit in it and feel miserable about it and be stressed about it. So yeah, 100% agree. It's a great processing tool for sure.
Yeah. I love that processing tool. I think that's great.
Cool. Well, I'm really glad that you got to go back and have your redemption run. I love those stories so much where you have an experience and you know it was a good experience, but you know you could have done better and you get to go back and do it. So that's awesome. I appreciate you walking through that.
Absolutely.
I'm curious now, like looking back on your first two experiences, like what advice would you give somebody who's maybe thinking about signing up for their first marathon now?
Yeah. The first thing I would say is that how you feel after your first run is not how you'll feel after every run. I think there's two places people get stuck. The first step, which I think in part sort of everyone has to get there on their own at their own pace. So that first step of doing the first run and then the do it again. I think those are like the two big hurdles. And the first one's up to everyone on their own, you know, whether a friend gets you out to run or whatever it is. But the second one, it gets better. Like it truly gets better. Your relationship with running changes, your relationship with yourself through running changes, confidence changes. It just, I can't think of anywhere where it like negatively impacted life.
And I can think of a lot of places where to the impacted life. So it's not always easy right away,
but it'll feel different with each run. You'll build a little more confidence with each one. Whether, and like we're talking laps around the neighborhood, not signing up for the city miles.
Sure, yeah. A little bit. Just getting started.
Yeah, that was, and most, I don't think that's the journey for most, and I don't think it should be. But the lap around your neighborhood, like do it one day, see how you feel. Like make yourself commit to something, whether it's like 5 of them or 10 of them or whatever it is for you, but get over that first little hurdle.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have to keep going. It's kind of like we were talking about in the beginning, like you do just kind of prove it to yourself as you go, but you have to start to be able to put yourself in a spot where you can prove it to yourself. So no, I love that. That's great. And then the last couple of questions I usually ask are just about like fuel and shoes and things like that. I always give the disclaimer, like you talked about, even for your first race experience, trial and error is going to be your best friend with anything in running. So don't take this as science, like do what's best for you. But for you, like what fuel options did you find most helpful through your running journey?
Yeah, I got much better with this on the second journey, the second time through. The
first one, I did those gummies a lot. I wish I could.
And they were fine filling, but definitely I was underfueled. Then I started playing around with gels. I might have had some gels the first time. I don't love gels, but I appreciate what they do. So I did some gels. I got into Uncrustables. I really love a good Uncrustable mid-run, especially if I'm doing some kind of loop that involves swinging back by the house where I can just sort of have them out. It's a little harder to carry them. Electrolyte hydration, got much more focused on hydration after that first experience. And what else? Occasionally, like, honestly, there was one run the first time through where it started early morning before stores were open. And it was one of those, like, it was 2 miles in. I have nothing in the tank. No reason why. Like, it wasn't nothing crazy had happened. And I found one gas station. It was like 6 a.m. And I think I got a banana and Pop-Tarts. And ate those. I love Pop-Tarts.
ate those and finished like, I think it was like 15.
And it was wow.
I almost quit. And then, so like, you cannot understate how important it is to be appropriately fueled.
Yes.
For these runs. Like, that completely changed the whole run. So I'm trying to think about, oh, and I actually started for a long stretch, purely based on that first marathon where someone gave me Mott's, specifically Mott's gummies. And it hit me so well that I spent the next training cycle always running with at least 2 packs of Mott's gummies. And I didn't even always bring like honey stinger gummies, right? Like yeah. Literally just those gummies. I did that for the whole second training block. And I don't really eat them right now because I literally like got sick of them because yeah, I had them sure. so much.
But
those
hit
perfectly.
Yeah, that's a great point. I love when people bring up non like commercialized fuel options on here because it just shows you don't have to spend your entire bank account on fuel options. Like everybody's yeah. a little bit different. Maybe you'll find your next like fruit snack fuel option that just sits right with you, and then you know you can stick with it from there. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then for shoes, what have you liked for shoes over time?
I became a Hoka person. I think someone just recommended it because like the thicker sole.
Mm-hmm.
I made one mistake. I went and did the shoe like scanner at my local running shop, and they put me in. I have 2 different size feet. Fun fact, like half size off. One's longer and thinner, and then one's sort of shorter and wider. And I went with the bigger size to accommodate the bigger foot. And why they end up being wider. And so the first block, I dealt with blisters all the time.
Mm.
And I was like, I need to change something. So I was running in the Bondis, I think. And then I switched to the Cliftons and went down a half size. And so it was a little snug on one foot, but then my right foot, the smaller foot, it felt better in. I had 0 blisters the whole second training block. So all that to say, trial and error. I wish I had like switched to Bondis much sooner, but I was like, nope, I got my Cliftons. Of course I'm getting blisters. Like that's just part of training. Like you're going to have blisters. And that was very much not the case once I got the right fitting shoe. So that's not, I don't think Bondis are the answer for everybody or Hokas, but whatever that, like it made a huge impact.
Yeah.
Not having to deal with blisters all the time.
I think, yeah, just be open to trying a couple options. I know a lot of like local running stores are also really great about return policies too. So
yes,
if you get something that you don't love, you know, don't feel afraid to return it and try something different. It makes a huge difference.
For sure.
Well, cool. Well, I'm curious what's, you know, coming up next for you. Do you have anything that you're training for right now or anything in the future you're hoping to run?
I have just started picking up more running in the last month. I applied for London. And did not get in. Missed that.
Same here. Yep.
So it's funny. Herm runs. Alex and I are buddies, and we did a shakeout together in New York last year. And then he went and did London, and so he said, "I'm telling you, you have to go do it because you like New York's hard. I don't have anything to measure it against, so I just assume like anything's gonna stink and be sure. hard, and like that's the joy in it." And he's like, it's a totally different race. It's flatter. It's faster. You'll feel so much better. Again, I tried New York as well. I did New York lottery. Didn't get that. I'm not going to fundraise 3 years in a row. That just feels like a lot to be asking friends and family to do. So I did lottery London, didn't get that. I signed up to do, if you don't get London, you can sign up to do the Brighton Marathon.
Yeah.
And I put in for that just as like a, hey, would we ever do like a family trip and like go over there for like a week and a half and this marathon can just be one little piece of it? We have not decided whether we're actually, that's expensive. So
sure, sure.
I don't know with the flights and everything if we'll do it, but
I think I'll have another 3 weeks to decide whether to take that. But other than that, I did a half a couple months ago just to get my cousin into running. I'm trying, my cousin's 22, former athlete, trying to figure out, you know, like life and fitness and how he wants to approach it. I'm signing us up for a half. He's super athletic. And so he came out and ran with me and like blew up at mile 12. He was all like classic first time.
Sure.
I was like, oh, if you're faster than me, go. And then I ran by him as he was bent over at mile 12.
So I want to sign us up for another one at some point. I was signed up for a last person standing race.
Oh, cool.
That I was going to try to do. And then I ended up having a trip up to New York to see that friend. And there's only so much travel you can do with a family and be present for all the things you want to be present for. So I ended up canceling that. My eyes are open for the next thing. I need to figure out what it's going to be. But I think probably half's a nice distance.
I like half marathons too. It's a good distance.
It pushes you. You feel really accomplished, but it takes up less of the day.
Yep.
There's plenty of local ones you can find everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. Recovery's not so bad. You can go back out and do a short run a couple of days later. I like the half distance for sure.
Yeah. So we'll see. But it's something. I've been out running a lot more in the last kind of 2-3 weeks, trying to go like 3 or 4 times a week and 3 to 5 miles. And I haven't stretched it past that yet. That's on my mind.
Cool.
I need something. I need the next. Yeah. It's a little bit addictive.
Oh, totally. And you always feel like you have to have something on the calendar too. Like you said, like to just have something to work towards, to formulate like your life plan around and all that. So yeah.
Absolutely.
But looking forward to seeing what you have coming up next. And I guess if anybody wants to follow along with you as well and see what you got going on, where can they find you?
Yeah, on TikTok, I'm Dad Runs. I'm getting more running stuff up now that I'm running more again. And then on Instagram, I'm Dad Runs 26. So at some point, I need to run another marathon just to keep the handle honest. those are the two spots that I do running content. And probably my favorite thing from the running journey, other than all the benefits, like health wise, I met a random person from TikTok at the first marathon when I was cramping. They're like, "Hey, you were posting your training," and I was like, "Yeah, it's not going great right now." And then the second one, I met Herm. I've been on like podcasts like this to have conversations, group shakeout runs, just like the community, the sub community that's been built. And connected. Like, I don't run at a local run club because I just, my runs time wise need to be efficient with a family. And so to drive somewhere and do the whole thing, I don't have that much free time in the schedule. And so I feel like TikTok and Instagram, like, this is my run club.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I love that. And I love the connections that have been made and sort of the fun and like cheering for me. I never tracked marathons. And now all of a sudden I have friends that are in them and I'm like, I got to download the app and see how they're doing. And
yeah.
So that wouldn't have happened if we weren't all connected there. So it's been a neat place.
Yeah, it's very cool. The running community is awesome. It just consistently surprises me, the people that you meet online and that you get to end up meeting in person too eventually. It's so cool. And if anybody's listening and thinking like, oh, I'm starting off on my journey, I don't need to be posting, nobody cares, I can promise you there's a whole corner of the internet that cares about your journey, and you're going to meet a ton of people that way. So definitely do it.
Absolutely. And we'll root for you hard.
Absolutely.
And we'll not judge you for holding your camera at 0.5 while you run.
Right. Yep. Nope. All part of the game. That's how we meet each other. But thank you so much again for walking through your journey. It was awesome getting to hear your New York Marathon experiences. Like I said, looking forward to hearing what's next for you.
Awesome. I appreciate it. And I hope your running's going well. I feel like I didn't get to ask you too much, which I know is sort of the setup. But do you have a race on the calendar?
I have a couple coming up. I'm doing a couple local, I'm running City of Oaks in Raleigh. One this year, that's my big marathon that I'm training for. And then I've got a couple of halves kind of sprinkled in. I like to have halves on the calendar leading up to a marathon, so I don't get bored mostly.
Yeah. I think I need to take that strategy. I'm floating again. I'm back to floating and I need to get something down.
Yeah, it helps for sure. But yep, that's all I got coming up this year for the most part. Hopefully next year I'll get lucky with the lottery or something like that and have something a little bigger, but for now, just the local stuff.
Awesome. Very nice. Well, thanks again for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. If you're enjoying MFM, it would mean a lot to me if you could rate and review this episode wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you know anyone training right now, I'd love if you shared it with them too. See you on the next one.